What's up, hockey fans? This is episode 127 of the Clappercast. I'm Burke, and as always, joined by my co-host, Sean. Sean, the ride came to an end. How's it going, man?
You know, I'm pretty sad. I'm disappointed. I'm sad and disappointed. Like, I know I predicted the Avs in five, so I'm not surprised at the result. But, like, come on. They can't even win one game.
You gotta win one at home.
You gotta win one of those home games. You gotta. But I think, for me, the... We'll just dive right into this series. I'll just start rambling about it. It's fine. But the most iconic or most telling moment of that entire series was, I think, the Avs' third goal in the last game when Mike Smith tried to shoot it out of the zone, but it bounced off the ref right to an Avalanche player, and then the Avs went and got a scoring chance and got it. I think that sums up everything that happened where the Oilers couldn't get a bounce. The reffing was inconsistent and atrocious. The goaltending for the Oilers was terrible. The defense for the Oilers was terrible. And they just couldn't counter what the Avs had.
And that power play.
Yeah.
They just couldn't get it done.
No, the Avalanche, like, the defense of the Avalanche is great. Like, their stick work is phenomenal. They always have a stick tying up another player. They always have a stick in the lane. The Oilers could not get a pass through. They couldn't get any shots off. Like, they were stifled. And they didn't adapt. They didn't counter. They didn't do anything to really figure out how to play against them.
Yeah, it seemed like... I think you wrote an article, and it was just everything that could go wrong did go wrong for the Oilers.
Over on overtimeheroics.net, what went wrong for the Oilers versus the Avalanche? Just a quick plug.
There's a lot of players that obviously got injured. I think, like, the most obvious was, like, Draisaitl.
Yeah, Draisaitl, his high ankle sprain, and clearly that was impacting him, like, especially in the last game when... After the Avalanche had kind of slew-footed Draisaitl and slashed his ankle countless times through the series, he finally hit a point where he'd fall and couldn't even get up or couldn't even get off the ice.
Yeah, he looked like he was about 50 out there.
Yeah, 50?
He looked like an old-timer out there. Yeah. Like, he was... And then Darnell Nurse had
Dogger's age.
Destroyed hip.
Like, I think, yeah, Darnell Nurse had, like, a hip flexor torn, and there were rumors about a core muscle injury, but I didn't see much about that after the playoffs ended.
Yeah,
but clearly his game was off. He couldn't do anything. He was weak, like, for him. And he's just getting exploited big time by the Avalanche offense.
Yeah. I don't know, like, where to begin, really, in this series. But, I mean, obviously, we don't want to do, like, a whole autopsy here of the series. But, you know, it was just the McDavid, Draisaitl, just they couldn't carry the team anymore, like, with the defense that the Avalanche had. There's a lot of great clips of, like, Makar making great plays on McDavid, trying to beat him one-on-one.
Yep.
And then, like, you had McKinnon, who had some gross goals out there, but Cale Makar, I think I sent you that stat, and it was like there's been four occurrences where a defenseman had, I think, like, 9 points or something in a four-game sweep, and Makar has two of them this year.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck?
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. Makar has 9 points in the four games, and he's doing everything, offensively and defensively, shutting down McDavid. You know, he's doing that better than anybody else has that I've seen in recent games, recent seasons. That he's not letting McDavid get by. He's getting a stick in the way. He's stifling the chance. But then he's not just stopping it. He's getting the puck, and then he's going the other way with it and creating offense. You know, that's an insane skill level. And, like, you know, does Makar, if Colorado wins, does Makar get the Conn Smythe? Like, that's an argument that, like, I would legitimately, looking at the Avalanche players, Makar would be, like, the favorite.
Yeah, I mean, like, that... That part of his game is underrated for sure. Like, everyone knows him for, like, the offense and stuff, but to be able to shut down McDavid like he did so much, you know, like a more of, like, a Jacob Slavin type of defenseman, where he's, like, you know, more of that defensive guy, but to have that and the offense, it's like, that's so special. I think Wayne Gretzky on TNT coverage or something was saying, like, you know, this is like Bobby Orr 2.0. Yep. To be able to just dominate at both ends of the ice. To shut down a play, like you said, and then to just skate it up the ice and create offense, like, that's how Bobby Orr changed the game. So it's pretty cool to see.
And, you know, just the other thing, Makar averaged over 28 minutes per game in this series. Just putting that out there. He averaged 28 minutes per game. The next on the team was Devon Taves, who averaged just under 26. Everybody else on that team, like even Landeskog, McKinnon, Rantanen, I mean, Landeskog and McKinnon averaged just over 21 minutes. Rantanen, 18. Like,
yeah.
He's on the ice for almost half the game. He's on the ice for 7 minutes more than most of his other teammates at the most, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. I mean, like, they did have, like, I guess Sam Girard got hurt in the series before.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, if you look at the rest of their defense, like, Devon Taves is unreal. Just the way he sees the game is amazing. Great pickup for them for two seconds. and then, like, who else do they have? They got like Eric Johnson Manson. And Jack Johnson.
Yeah, they got the Johnson duo and Manson and Byram.
So like, it's pretty crazy that Makar plays 28 minutes a game. But if you think about it, it's like the way he plays, like he doesn't really take that much abuse. Like,
no,
you know, like
he's good
like
at avoiding it.
He's good at rolling off checks and everything.
And so he doesn't need to use his body to make the defensive play. He can use his positioning and his stick, so he doesn't even need to engage a whole lot. He's good enough. He's good enough and smart enough.
Yeah, and then, like, it allows those depth defensemen to be effective in the minutes that they play rather than mm-hmm. overstretching them. Like, you know, playing, like, Eric Johnson, I think, Avs fans, maybe, I don't know if they didn't quite, maybe not soured, that's not the right word, but I think down the stretch going into playoffs, he wasn't playing very well. And then going like in playoffs now, he's actually been really good in his role. And it's like, yeah, because you don't have to play him that much. Like,
exactly.
You know, you got a guy like Makar who can just eat up minutes. So anyway, like it's just crazy to see a defenseman racking him up like that. And then I you know, the one, I guess the one storyline obviously is Vander Kane. And that hit, the cross check on Kadri. I mean, the suspension definitely warranted from my end of things. Dangerous play. But, like, the amount of shit that Evander Kane got for that, I think, is funny from Avalanche fans because there's a lot of players on the Avalanche who, you know, like you said, were doing things in this series that are pretty dirty. But
that are suspendable,
you know,
in their own right, yeah.
There's a guy like Gabriel Landeskog and, you know,
yeah,
shit, Nazem Kadri himself have done similar plays. So, like, let's...
yeah, like, calm down a bit, because, like, didn't Landeskog go out and, like, trash Kane after that hit for
yes,
how dangerous
he
it
was?
Did.
And
then
he goes
like, and
does
the same fucking thing to Cassie in a couple games later. Like,
yeah,
we know,
like...
Landeskog's one of the dirtiest players in the league, underrated. But,
yeah.
Like, that's just, it's blatant at that point.
Yeah, he was saying, like, you know, that's a play that you learned to not make as a kid, so I guess he must not have learned that. It's like, Landeskog, you cut your teeth in the league by elbowing guys in the head and cross-checking
yeah.
them in the head.
Not to mention,
so, like,
his thing on Kirby Docka, was it last season?
Yeah, so, like...
Goes and breaks his wrist on a similar play.
Calm down. Like,
yeah.
It was a bad hit. It was a bad mm-hmm. play. It was a dangerous play.
Yeah.
I agree. But, like, let's not pretend that this is the dirtiest thing that's ever happened in hockey and that a lot of your players on your team have never done anything the exact same. Like,
yeah.
a lot of the comments. I mean, I hate going on Reddit and looking at comments anyway, but, like, just seeing, like, you know, all the talking heads and stuff being like, oh, my God. It's like, okay, like, let's chomp down. Like, some of these slewfoots
yeah.
that have been happening in this series are just as bad.
No, that's the like, thing. Like, Colorado went and got away with two blatant slewfoots on Oilers players in one period and gotten zero penalties or zero anything out of it.
Oh, and then,
like,
some of them led to scoring chances where
yeah.
they scored too. So
yeah.
it's like, okay, like, you know, if you want to bring up like dangerous plays, like that's one too. So,
yep.
And
so
you know, like Landeskog hit, what on Yamamoto?
Yeah, that
one too.
I almost
side,
forgot
so,
about that. The
so,
blind
you know,
side that sent Yamamoto out for the
like,
series.
That's a hit that you learn as a kid not to make too. But
yeah.
anyway, I mean, like that's, I think Kane deserved a suspension.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Those two things can exist at
dangerous.
The same time, right? Like, he needs a suspension, and some of those other things need to be called as well. They mm-hmm. they can exist at the same time. So anyway, yeah, I mean, and then, like, I mean, I got to say it, but it's not obviously one person's fault, but like, man, Mike Smith, like, I know like some goalies, like they make amazing saves and let in some softies, but like he is just next level at that. Like, you know,
I don't know if I can even recall, because it happens so often, how many times a random weak unscreened wrist shot from like 30 feet away somehow gets through him.
Yeah.
There's that one play, I think it was JT Compher muscled off Evan Bouchard at the blue line and got right. positioning. So I think Compher's at like the half wall, fires a wrist shot, and it goes through Mike Smith's five hole.
Yeah, it just snuck through.
That can't go through. That can't go in. And like so many goals over these playoffs, like Edmonton was saved by their offense the second round, the first one they kind of shut down a little bit. But they were saved by their offense against Calgary. But then the offense couldn't get there. So these like shots that went through Mike Smith that shouldn't have gone in,
yeah,
were so much more apparent and so much more damaging.
Yeah. It was just tough to watch because, like, you know, the Oilers would start to get some life and then it would just be like a softy. And it's like, oh, yeah. Come on. And that just kills your bench. Like,
it does.
You know, playing
any
sport.
They go
right?
and score it's a tying like... goal, and then like 10 seconds later, they give up the go ahead goal again. It's just, yeah. they can't, they're not going to stay in a game like that.
It's a momentum killer. So I'm sure you'll be on the lookout for what the Oilers are doing in the offseason, because they've got a lot of work to do, a lot of potential guys leaving the team.
Oh, it's an absolute mess.
Yeah. Like, I looked at it the other day and I sent you a text. And I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
There's so many expiring contracts. Like, between, I think it was like, I took a look at like a lot of teams and it was like the Oilers and Calgary Flames actually had a lot of the similar thing going on where it's like, what are we going to do here? Like, who are mm-hmm. we going to keep?
Yeah. And then, you know, Ken Holland's talking about, oh, yeah, we've got some issues with the cap space. It's like, yeah, no shit. You created the issues.
Yeah. Where did these cap issues come from?
It's like, yeah. Why are you surprised here, dude? You made the issues. But yeah. They were talking about, like, Mike Smith and Duncan Keith. Like, they want info if they're going to be retiring by Canada Day. So that's a possibility. And, like, oddly enough, if Duncan Keith retires, that frees up, I want to say it's almost $8.5 or $9 million of cap space.
Jeez.
For the Oilers. Between his contract and like the cap recapture penalty or something.
I saw a thing and it said that it was from Friedman and it said that I think Keith is more likely than Smith at this point, but
yeah,
who knows, right?
It's exactly,
anything's possible.
If it's money related, there's very likely that Ken Holland could just offer Duncan Keith $1.5 million in a scouting position or something to make up for it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, get him off the roster.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the one that's going to piss me off the most is Jesse Puljujärvi, because it's pretty obvious that the Oilers aren't going to re-sign him at this point. It's been reported they're prioritizing Yamamoto and they don't really have the space for Puljujärvi.
Yeah.
But it's like all of Jesse's underlying numbers indicate that he is like ready to break out and be just a solid top six forward. Like, he underperformed a bit, but he was creating so many chances. He had the best, like, yeah, the best underlying numbers on the Oilers last season. And he's kind of primed to be one of those, like, Burakovsky or Nichushkin types that just takes a little bit and then he just breaks out eventually. So it's going to really suck to see him go somewhere else and then start to flourish a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, another way of seeing that is, like, he took some money off of his sale price, right? So you could potentially sign him for less because based on his playoff performance.
Yeah.
Because his position to negotiate is a lot weakened, so it's like you could get him for cheaper. But yeah, that's too bad. But yeah, they've definitely got some work to do with the expiring contracts and, you know, a few RFAs. So I mean, I'll be talking to you over the off season, I guess, about what's happening there.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the Colorado Avalanche, not to take anything away from them in this series, they played really well, just scored in bunches and just took control of games. And yeah, it's going to be exciting to see them in the finals. I know you mentioned to me during the series that, you know, there's a little bit of bitterness there, but
Yeah, I just don't like how the Avalanche played through the series, like all the kind of cheap plays, the dirty stuff. Not a huge fan of that.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, I think I mentioned to you, like, in that series against Florida with the Capitals, it's like, I don't care about Florida. Like, I don't dislike them. Like, I wanted to see them win after they beat the Capitals. So it's always funny to, you know, year over year when you get into playoffs, like, oh, I don't really care about that team. Or, like, now I hate that team.
Exactly. Like,
so it's kind of funny. So, yeah, I guess we'll talk about the other series here. So Tampa Bay beat the New York Rangers. And I don't know. I was hoping the Rangers were gonna pull through. But
it looked like they started to. I mean, they went up 2-0 in the series. That was a good start for them. But did they choke, or did their actual performance just kind of catch up to them a little bit?
It looked like they just, like, Shesterkin might have had some fatigue set in. I know some of the analysts were talking about, like, you know, Vasilevsky's been here, done that 2 years in a row, and he knows how to pace himself and knows exactly what to expect. But Shesterkin, this is kind of his first big, deep push. And so, you know, they some of the former goalies were talking about how it looked like he was a little tired and letting in some goals that he wouldn't have earlier in the playoff run. So I think that might have been a factor, but also just, you know, obviously Vasilevsky and the Rangers and just not being able to really push ahead in some of those later games in the series. Like, they would score and then the Lightning would just bounce right back. And then in the first couple of games, it looked like the Lightning were kind of running scared, but then they just, you know, they just took over. And just the experience, I think, came through where it's like, you know, we're down 3 games in the series. Who cares, Jonathan Huberdeau? But they actually have the pedigree to say, not that they did say that, but, you know, they didn't
they
care.
They can let their play speak for itself, and like you said, been there, done that.
And like the depth guys, like, I mean, obviously, like guys like Kucherov and Stamkos are having huge playoffs, but like, you know, guys like Nick Paul and Maroon and Perry and, you know, they're stepping up because, like, Braden Point didn't play a single game in that series. It didn't look like they were missing anybody.
Yeah, and that's great when they can have those guys step up like that. You mentioned about Shesterkin's fatigue and how Vasilevsky knows how to pace himself just from being there and having done this a couple of seasons ago. For the past couple of seasons, pardon me, you think of the workload that Shesterkin's had over the season too. Not even just a factor of him not maybe knowing how to pace himself yet, but just how much of the Rangers' performance is on Shesterkin. You know, how many like insane saves he's had to make, how on his game he's had to be all season. It's not even a case of like, oh, he just tired himself out because he went too hard. It's like he is that team a lot of nights. He kept them in the game. You know, he kept them in so many games. He, you know, he's probably the likely Vezina winner. He's an MVP candidate.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he had such a good season that it's kind of bound to happen. Eventually he's going to slump a bit or even just get tired just because of how much his workload has been all season.
Yeah. And, like, it was pretty obvious. Like, Tampa's game was to just attack Shesterkin. Like, they went after him. They were, like, you know, touching his glove after the whistle and, like, you know, getting up in his grill. And there's a lot of calls that, like, could have been goaltender interference, but were ruled to be fine. Like, even like the series winning goal, it was like, like, it could have been, but like, that was clearly like their game plan was like, just get up in his kitchen and make it hard for him to see pucks and, you know, go after those loose pucks. Cause, you know, he was letting up some big rebounds at times because of that fatigue. So they were able to capture on that and score. And, you know, all those guys that make a living around the net were able to get some goals for Tampa. And, you know, as much as I hate it, they're going to the finals for the third year in a row. And you got to respect that. You know, it's pretty amazing. I personally hope that the Corey Perry and Patrick Maroon, you know, situation cancels each other out.
Yeah, which, the unstoppable force or the immovable object, which one's going to win this? Because Corey Perry has lost the finals in two consecutive seasons with two different teams against the Lightning, so he finally joins the Lightning. But on the other hand, Patrick Maroon has been on three consecutive cup winners, the Blues and then the last 2 years of the Lightning. So one of these streaks has to end.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the second time it's ever happened that a player has gone to the cup final with three different teams in a row, the first being Marian Hossa with, I guess, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Chicago.
Yeah.
Hossa finally won in the last one.
It would have been Pittsburgh, Detroit, Chicago.
Yeah, because he lost on both Pittsburgh and Detroit.
Yeah.
And they faced off back-to-back years. And, yeah, it sucks for him to lose back-to-back. But he finally won in Chicago. And so does that repeat? Does Perry get another cup ring, you know, on kind of the bookends of his career, possibly?
Yeah, really.
I think it was his first season in the league with Anaheim when they won. And it could be potentially his last season. So yeah, who keeps the streak going? Patrick Maroon 4 years in a row or Corey Perry 3 years in a row? I don't know, but yeah, I mean with the Rangers, it's like I was kind of surprised by you know some of their performances. I think the big story is like Gerard Gallant had that kid line of Kako, Lafreniere, and Filip Hedl that was doing really well throughout playoffs. They would start games a lot of the time for him. And then the last game, he just, like, scratched Kako. And then...
He didn't really have a reason for it either.
Yeah, like, someone went on the bench, like, mid-game, was like, hey, can you go into, like, why you scratched Kako? And he was like, nope.
Yeah, and then I think today it just came out. They asked him again. He answered. He was like, I was just trying to win a game. And there was no real.
And I think Kako said, like, no one explained to him why.
Which is really, really weird. If, you know, I know he's not exactly living up to the hype, but he's also not playing terrible. And like you said, that kid line was doing really well.
Yeah. So it was funny. And then another guy that stood out to me as just being pretty disappointing overall in that series was Artemi Panarin. He only had a goal and two assists. And that's a guy who makes like what, $11.5 million. Like his contract is gross. So you'd expect a hell of a lot more performance from a guy like that, in a series. Yeah, he makes $11.6 million. So, you know, 3 points in five games. That's okay for a guy like Kako, I think, but,
I think you're missing. Where are you getting your stat there?
Just on NHL.com. Did he have a couple more in the first game?
In five games? Yeah, he must have, because I mean, it was a six-game series, so he played all the games.
It must have just cut off the first game for me. But the last five games of the series, he only had 3 points. So he had...
There you go.
He had three games out of six where he had zero points. So... I don't know. And I mean, even with an extra 2 points, that's in one game. That's you got to get more from a guy like that. So that I think that's disappointing.
Yeah, and it's also a bit of a testament to the defense and the goaltending for Tampa Bay.
Yeah,
you know that they were able to step up and shut down one of this you know insanely dynamic and potent offense.
Yeah.
Because like that's basically the trend down the all the top scorers for the Rangers, they all had 5 points. There are five guys who had 5 points in the series, so it's like they're clearly shutting him down. They're like, no one's really taking charge here. No one can really get anything going.
Yeah, and I think another thing in the series is that the Rangers missed a few open nets. It's like they very easily could have actually scored a couple more goals, but they didn't. But Tampa was just like, yeah, we're not losing this game. We're going to get a goal right back. So even if they had hit those empty nets, it's not for sure that they would have won, but you know, they lacked, that killer instinct wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Like they just weren't able to bury a lot of those chances.
Yeah, and you really saw it in the last five games of the series where they only had, or four games of the series where they only had five goals, pardon me. Like, they just, they couldn't find that offense. They couldn't find that killer instinct. And one of the things for me, it just goes back to that, why I didn't think they were going to advance out of the first round was just their five-on-five play and how much their game was revolving around Shesterkin and the power play. They made it this far, but by the end of it, Tampa Bay was just that much better 5v5 that the Rangers could not get anything going.
Yeah, the Tampa Bay was just
really dominated it.
The puck battles, like all those 50-50 puck battles seemed to go Tampa's way. And they just forechecked and were able to pressure like guys like Justin Braun on the Rangers. So, yeah, I mean, I hate it, but Tampa's in the finals again. Just quickly before we move on to the actual finals, it's interesting that both opponents, both losers in the conference finals were kind of like early in their windows. Like, it's like they weren't expected to get that far. So for both of those teams, it's pretty, you know, it's an accomplishment, and they should be proud of like getting that far, and it's valuable experience for like the core of the team that'll be around for next season. But, you know, New York, like, obviously they had like a coaching change and a new goal, like Shesterkin was amazing, but like no one expected them to get to the conference finals. Same with the Oilers, right? So it's just good experience, and, you know, they should. Obviously, the saltiness will be there for the players and for fans, but like that's all part of it, right? Like you can't. It's very rare that you just get a new team and you just win right away. Like, I mean, Tampa. Look how many times Tampa got to the conference finals, or, you know, to the finals and lost, and like, you
and
know,
look
it's
how many
like,
times Colorado has been eliminated in the second round, like four straight years or something.
Yeah, like the Capitals, St. Louis, right? You just you go through that, like that battle to push further, and then, you know, you sooner or later you hope that the team breaks through.
Yeah, I mean, some teams win early. Like Pittsburgh got their first cup pretty early, and I think Chicago got theirs earlier than maybe expected too, based off when they drafted really high. But generally speaking, like, unless you hit a streak and it keeps rolling all the way through the playoffs, you're going to take a few years, like Colorado has, like Tampa Bay has before they went on their streak. Like, it's going to take a bit. So, like you said, it's awesome. You know, it sucks that it ended as poorly as it did for Edmonton, for example. But this is also the best playoff run they've had since 2006.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, you know, new energy around the team, around the city. Like, it was great.
Yeah. And
it's not
like
a disappointing season by any means.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, when I was in high school, it was like Edmonton was in the basement every single year, so it's fun to have them be at the top, right? Like, it's just such a difference.
They're a running joke for other reasons now.
yeah, exactly. All right, well, I guess let's jump into it here. The finals, you got the Colorado Avalanche and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Can both teams lose?
I really want Colorado to win. I just want not the Avalanche. Or not the Lightning. I want the Avalanche to win. I just don't, nobody, I hate the Avalanche, or fuck. I hate the Lightning so much. They're messing me up here. I just want anybody but them. I don't want them to win again. I want them to lose, and I never want them to win again. Avalanche need to push here, and they need to beat them. I hope that they win. I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. You know, like, we talked a lot about Makar and McDavid. You know, how are the Lightning going to, you know, have their big guys go up against Makar? Is he going to be able to shut them down similarly to McDavid and, you know, hurt Dreisaitl? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I think Tampa, I think Tampa takes the series. I think Tampa wins three in a row. I think, you know, Tampa's got more offensive depth than Edmonton. You know, Kucherov, Stamkos, and like Cirelli, and like whoever's playing up there at this point, like, they're all good. And it sounds like Braden Point's going to be back too. So that kind of gives the Lightning that second scoring line, which is going to put pressure on more Avalanche defenders that might not be able to handle like Tampa's offense. For me, there's also the factor that the Avalanche have been sitting for, they're going to be sitting for like a week and a half between the end of the last series and this one, compared to the Lightning that we're only going to have like 4 days. There's that stat of the impact of sitting of like the teams who sweep a series and then they often lose the first game of the next series because they've been sitting for so long is the hypothesis. But I think that's going to play a factor. It's going to lean the Lightning's way early in the series, and it's going to be hard for Colorado to come back. So I think in the long run of this cup final, I think Tampa just gets the advantage early, and it's going to be too hard for Colorado to come back and combat the whole thing.
Yeah, but you're leaving out playing in Denver, the Mile High City. Altitude is going to play a factor, Sean.
Yes.
Colorado is conditioned to playing at such a high altitude, whereas Tampa plays at sea level. So Colorado has an advantage because they have home ice advantage.
Tampa's going to have the oxygen tanks on the bench trying to cope.
Yeah. I think it's going to be, you mentioned Braden Point's probably going to come back. There's signs that say that Kadri might come back for Colorado too. So, you know, if he comes back, that's a pretty big deal for Colorado. Mm-hmm. So,
especially this season with how good Kadri's been.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's like they're facing a really good goalie now. So how's that going to happen? Because I guess,
yeah, they can't just take a random wrist shot from 40 feet away and think it's going to squeak through Vasilevsky.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are they going to do? Maybe if Kadri comes back, he just runs Vasilevsky and then gets another water bottle thrown at him. So, yeah, it's...
Bennington sends his regards.
At least it's, like, someone new, but, like, I just don't want Tampa to win. I want a new team to win, and I hope that Colorado can do it.
On a positive note, though, This is going to make up for last year's dud of a cup final, I have to imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly,
for
the
sure.
last two have been kind of iffy, but last year's was especially bad. So, yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, yeah, I agree. Like last year sucked. Like thanks Montreal, but like you blew it, and it wasn't fun. So you know, Colorado was one of the favorites coming into the season. So it's cool to see them actually live up. So hopefully they can. I hope that they can push through. I like Colorado growing up. I wouldn't really call myself a fan right now. I'm on the bandwagon. But, you know, I love Peter Forsberg growing up, so I like have a soft spot for them, I guess. The only other thing I have to say is that the crests that are going on the jersey for the finals, have you seen those?
No.
They suck. Like, the old ones were so cool, but these ones are, like, minimalist, and they've got, like, on one side of the Stanley Cup it says 20, and on the other side of the Stanley Cup it says 22, so it looks like the season is fucked up, like, it's not, like, 21, 22, you know? It's supposed to say 2022, but it looks like they screwed it up. So
it's the 2020-2022 season.
Yeah, exactly. And it just, I hate this... Like, everything has to be, like, minimalist, and then, like, they don't put the, like, Stanley Cup, you know, finals or anything on the ice anymore. Like, the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know how they used to put that on the ice?
Yeah.
Right by the blue line?
Yep.
Like, they don't do that anymore because of that ad space. And it's just, like...
It sucks.
Why does everything have to be minimalist and, you know, taking away the cool parts of, like, the playoffs... And then, you know, what is it next year? They're going to put ads on the jerseys. So it's like,
Well, you mentioned that the cup final or the playoffs and the cup final thing on the ice. Like, that's such a cool thing looking back on old highlights when you look at when you go and watch old stuff and you see the playoff thing on the ice. It just looks so cool to have that atmosphere, that little tag on there.
Yeah, it was just like a thing. Like, it was just like a permanent thing. And it was such a, like, just a little difference for playoffs, but it's, like, something special. And it was just, it's like, I swear to God, the NHL marketing team just does everything in their power to move in the wrong direction. And it's, like, you know, they alienate people who like the game, and they do such a crap job of, like, bringing in new fans.
Yeah.
Like, they just do everything wrong. It's like, come on. Like, do like some sort of poll or something to see.
The NHL's best marketing person was that Tony X guy on Twitter from years ago.
Yeah, like that like Solo City guy from St. Louis. He was like, wow, hockey's wild. And
like, yeah. Why are you even hiding this from me? Like, he's the best marketing person the NHL's ever had.
Yeah, I know. It's like, that's literally the best thing that could have happened. And they didn't. It's like one of those, like, just things that happens. But they just do such a bad job of, like,
making
that happen. They try and, like, bring celebrities to the game and, like, have, like, Paul Bissonnette go to, like, some, like, Instagram person. But it's like, they don't even pay attention during the game. It's like, just, like, I don't know. Bring like some kids or something. Like, I don't know.
They do such a bad job. They
bring
TikTok video people in to be official partners, and then you never hear about them again because it's like, who cares?
Yeah, they're not getting paid.
They do such a terrible job of marketing their stars, marketing the storylines, marketing like any of that. They have like all of these amazing players. They have some of the best players of all time on the ice right now, and it's like, you wouldn't know it if you didn't watch.
Yeah, and it's like one of the playoff like videos this year was like, you know, that one where it's like got that little, like, I don't know if it's like Blake Coleman's daughter or what, but it's like she's up against the glass like bang, and like Coleman's right there, and it's like, you know, they want it for home or something like that, but it's like, you know, it's like it has like a Canadian team, and it's like they want it for their country, and then it's like shows like an America, like the Blues or something, it's like they want it for their city, and then it's like players that play on a Canadian team don't give a shit if they win it for, they're not winning it for Canada.
Yeah, that's a media thing.
Like, it's all for their team. Like, it's like they don't give a shit about winning it for Canada. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's not like Leafs fans are gonna be like, fuck yeah, like Oilers made it to the finals. Like, they'll be like, they might cheer for them and be like,
like,
oh,
well, that's the thing.
Canadian,
it's like concept of Canada's team where it's like, oh, we'll band behind the Canadian team left because why not?
Yeah,
but it's
like,
that's not, that's like, yeah, it's different.
If Montreal had won last year, Leafs fans would have been like, I'm going to go kill myself. Like, they would have hated it. So it's like, I just, the ads just make no sense for like the actual storylines and like what fans actually like about the game. It's just like, you remember, like, I don't know, maybe I'm just showing my oldness here, but like those what if storylines or whatever that they did, like, you know, like, what if like Colorado didn't, I don't know, sign whoever, like who was like Ray Bourque. It was like, you know, what if Ray Bourque wasn't traded to the Colorado Avalanche, and then they showed like the, you know, after 22 years, Raymond Bourque, and it's like stuff like that. Or it's like, what if this guy never made this pass or something? It's like, those were cool. 'Cause it's like, it gets you like in the feel of the game and like what the cool moments and stuff. And it's not just like, they want to win it for the country that they live in. it's not the Olympics. I don't know, it's just like, bring back the good marketing team,
or like those those other ones that were like, because it's the cup and they got all the players getting all emotional and stuff in the post-game,
and they just like what does this mean to you, and they just
they can't say
speechless. Those were
like
good
stuff
too.
Like that shows the emotion and just gets you into the ad, like into the moment, like so much more than this like generic stuff that they're doing now. It's they don't have any like emotion or any connection to it.
Minimalist, like, it's, I don't know, I feel like an old man, but it's like
we're just out here yelling at clouds.
I don't know. I mean, it is noticeable though. Like, I mean, there's like people who like you know, say online, like, you know, football does like controls the media in the U.S. and they just, you know, they dominate everything, and it's like hockey doesn't stand out at all. It's the least watched, the major four, and it's like, you know,
it's even being surpassed by the MLS at this point, I think.
Yeah, so it's
like soccer's done such a good job of infiltrating the U.S. market and just being so popular and so accessible.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, hopefully people tune in and watch the finals. I think it's going to be a good one. It's just, if Tampa takes a huge lead, it's going to be tough for me to tune in.
Exactly.
But, I mean, it starts tomorrow, you know, 5 o'clock our time. And then there's a 3-day wait for the second game. So
which
I don't know what
weird,
I'm going to do with myself. it's gonna be a boring.
We're gonna have to go outside.
Hopefully the weather's nice and it's not raining because it's been so crappy. But
that wraps things up for this time here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.